Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, May 12th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, time is running out on a deadline for Southwest LRT money, and lawmakers inch toward an agreement on Real ID. After opening statements by both sides in a federal ISIS-related trial, the government introduced three of about 30 key witnesses. Diwali Saikautau reports.
Prosecutors say three Somali American men in their early 20s plotted to join ISIS and to murder abroad. The first to testify was a sister of a Somali American man, Hanad Abdullahi Mohalim. He's believed to have been killed in Syria less than 2 years ago. Two other witnesses, a passport specialist and a terrorism expert, also took the stand. Outside the courthouse, Fadumah Hussein, a mother of defendant Guled Omar, had this to say about what appears to be an all-white jury.
Although there is no people of color in the jurors, but we are still expecting them to be fair.
Defense attorneys say their clients never plotted to murder. Diwali Saikautau, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
The University of Minnesota's choice for athletic director says he wants to bring accountability and stability to the troubled department. Mark Coyle is expected to be signed to a contract tomorrow. Peter Cox has more.
It was a whirlwind 24 hours for Mark Coyle. Yesterday, he met with Board of Regents members, resigned as athletic director at Syracuse University, and by afternoon, he was introduced as the sole finalist for athletic director at the University of Minnesota. At first, Coyle seemed almost too emotional to speak.
So the question is, why Minnesota? You know, it's very simple for me. I've been in this for a long time. We love this place.
Coyle's Iowa roots and previous experience working for former U athletic director Joel Maturi helped lure him back. Coyle takes on a department in flux. Last year, former athletic director Norwood Teague resigned amid sexual harassment allegations. The school is facing a Title IX investigation, and several U of M basketball players have been suspended for off-the-court behavior. U President Eric Kaler says Coyle will face some difficult issues from the get-go.
Frankly, this has been a tough week and a tough couple of months for our men's basketball program. I'm profoundly disappointed in the continuing episodes of poor judgment and alleged crimes, and it simply can't continue. Mark is aware of my concerns, and wherever he's been, Mark's commitment to integrity is unquestioned.
Coyle has a bit of a reputation for cleaning up athletic programs in trouble. He was brought in as athletic director at Boise State University in 2011, as the school was dealing with NCAA violations that included several probationary measures. Dan Southern covered Coyle as a sports writer for the Idaho Statesman.
That's something that he kind of enjoys, is taking over places that need someone like him. That he's the kind of guy who's going to get the foundation in there to have a solid athletic program, the things that aren't necessarily the most exciting to talk about, you know, whether it's compliance or academics.
In Coyle's 3.5 years at Boise State, the athletics program had its best ever overall GPA. They also had success on the field. Men's and women's teams won 12 conference titles in his time there. That turnaround led him to Syracuse University, another school facing NCAA probation. In 10 months there, he fired one football coach and hired another, and both men's and women's basketball teams made it to the Final Four. But his abrupt departure there raised some eyebrows. The school issued a terse, two-sentence statement yesterday. It read, "Mark Coyle has informed the university that for family reasons, he is leaving the university for a position at Minnesota. We wish him well."
I can't stress enough. I regret the timing. There was one place I was going to leave Syracuse for, and it's Minnesota.
Coyle is well aware of the challenges the program faces. He says he wants to develop consistency and stability in University of Minnesota athletic programs. But he also wants to establish a good reputation.
Our number one priority will be our students, and we're going to make decisions that are in the best interest of our student athletes, and we want to make sure we provide them with everything they need to compete at the highest level academically, athletically, but most importantly, we want to make sure that all of us understand that we represent this institution, this community, and the state in a first-class manner in everything we do.
Coyle says he hopes to get to work after Memorial Day weekend, The Board of Regents is expected to sign off on his appointment tomorrow, as well as his five-year contract, paying a base salary of $850,000 a year. Covering education, I'm Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
The Minnesota Senate has passed a paid family leave plan, but it might not go any further this session. The proposal was approved as part of a tax bill that passed 37-30. It would provide partial replacement wages for up to 12 weeks after the birth of a child or to assist with a family member's extended illness. Democratic Senator Melissa Franzen of Edina says while some workers get paid parental benefits now, it's hit or miss.
Not a lot of people in our state have that decision. A lot of people have to go back to work, and they should be spending time with their child. This is about families. This is about the benefits of having that bonding between mom, dad, and new baby.
Republicans said the numbers don't add up. They also criticized the payroll tax on employers and employees used to pay for the program. Chanhassen Republican Senator Julianne Ortman said it's more of a burden than a benefit.
You're making it harder for Minnesotans to make ends meet. Making it harder to make it to the next paycheck. Have you not ever been in the situation where you had just $5 left in your pocket waiting for the next paycheck?
Nothing similar has advanced in the House, making it unlikely to reach Governor Mark Dayton's desk. State lawmakers will soon decide whether the Southwest Light Rail Transit Project remains on track as they negotiate a larger transportation funding bill in the closing days of the 2016 session. Transit has been a big sticking point in those negotiations, which were left unresolved a year ago. But House Republicans have recently softened their opposition to transit funding. They're just not ready to put it in writing. Tim Pugmire reports.
There's a lot at stake for transit in general this session. For Southwest Light Rail in particular, there's nearly $900 million in Federal Transit Administration funding on the line. The $1.8 billion project will connect Eden Prairie and downtown Minneapolis starting in 2020. Metropolitan Council Chair Adam Dunick says the legislature needs to approve the last piece of the project's funding puzzle, $135 million in state money. Dunick says there will be consequences if the funding doesn't come through this year.
First of all, our relationship with the FTA and the federal government in terms of building out our transit system would be damaged greatly, which is a challenge. And secondly, those federal dollars are so competitive these days that we just know that another region will be after them. And so it could potentially set the project back a year or so, or might set it back even longer.
Could it potentially kill it?
I don't like to use that word, but it's always a possibility.
House and Senate negotiators remain deeply divided over transportation funding. House Republicans still oppose the gas tax increase favored by Governor Mark Dayton and Senate Democrats, and until recently they've been similarly rigid on transit. But GOP lawmakers have been warming to the DFL plan to fund transit projects through a metro area sales tax increase, if that funding comes with reforms in the governance structure of the Metropolitan Council. They want local elected officials on the council serving staggered terms. House Transportation Chair Tim Kelly of Red Wing said he's holding off on putting transit support in an offer as long as Democrats continue to push for a gas tax increase.
The response is there because we didn't think that they took the gas tax issue very serious. So that's the way we felt against the first offer. So to come out and to put transit funding in immediately didn't make sense to us if that's the way our offers are going to go.
DFL Senate Transportation Chair Scott Dibble of Minneapolis said he was disappointed by the latest House offer yesterday and its failure to fund transit. Dibble stressed the importance of transit funding given the region's projected population growth.
It doesn't feel like we could pass a plan without major new investments for transit, particularly if we're going to have 750 to 800,000 people come to the metropolitan area. We can't build enough roads to accommodate all of that.
Minnesota business leaders and local government officials have been turning up the pressure on lawmakers to reach a transportation deal that includes transit. Nearly 200 county officials from throughout the state signed a letter this week urging action on a comprehensive long-term bill. Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin said transit funding, including Southwest, must be part of that solution.
If we whiff on this, if we fail to provide a transportation bill this year, then we are leaving federal money on the table, money that's going to go to Denver or Fort Worth, Dallas-Fort Worth or Houston or Seattle, all the places that we compete with. It's not going to be coming here.
Following their exchange of initial offers, House and Senate transportation chairs said they expect the governor's office and legislative leaders to join the next phase of negotiations. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
All those driver's licenses in the pockets and purses of Minnesotans are getting closer to a makeover. As many as 4 million identification cards would be converted to bring Minnesota into compliance with the federal Real ID law. The bill doing that is primed for a Senate vote today, and a different version will come up for a vote in the House in coming days. Brian Baxter reports the timeline remains in limbo, and some lawmakers are squeamish about passing extra costs on to license holders.
You know the drill. Around your birthday every 4 years, it's back to the licensing counter to fill out a form, do a vision test, and pose for that photo that never seems to come out well. That routine is likely to occur with a bit more scrutiny as Minnesota lawmakers end their holdout with the federal government over the Real ID. It's all designed to bring more peace of mind that IDs used to clear airport checkpoints aren't fake. Applicants will have to present a certified birth certificate or another secure document to prove their identity. Maple Grove Republican Representative Dennis Smith is the House bill sponsor. He says no one will be required to get a Real ID, but the expectation is that many people will.
Once implemented, you would be able to get a federal Real ID compliant license so you can fly, go into federal buildings, and go into military bases. Or you have the option of having the same license that you have today.
There has been talk about phasing in the new ID cards beginning this October, so everyone would just renew as their old license expired. That remains the goal in the House version. But Minnesota's Driver and Vehicle Service Division is also in the midst of replacing the computer system it uses to process licenses. To reprogram the current mainframe system to handle Real ID would cost millions and put programmers under a time crunch. So senators responded to the agency's concerns and in their bill would wait until the new registration system is up and running. That would push the introduction of Real ID out to January 2018. There's a hitch with that approach. The upgraded licenses will be required for boarding commercial aircraft as soon as 2018, a deadline that might get extended to 2020. Still, it means anyone who gets a standard ID card between October and the Real ID rollout would have to go back to the renewal counter sooner. As it now stands, people in that position would do so at personal expense. DFL Senator David Tomasonia Chisholm suspects it won't go over well.
Senator, we realize how many phone calls we're going to get when people have to pay twice, don't you?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Senator Tomasoni, unless we pick up this cost unless for we, them. So that's the decision we need to make.
Those last words came from Minneapolis DFLer Scott Dibble, who is carrying the bill to bring Minnesota into compliance. He elaborated on the potential expense to state residents.
People will be put to that full expense, you know, on a earlier than 4-year cycle. So, you know, if you have a certain type of license, it's as much as $35. If you have another type of license, it's $17 expense.
Some legislators have raised the idea of a rebate program or pursuing federal grant dollars, but nothing is concrete. Beneath the discussion of dollars is continued resentment among some legislators that Minnesota has to make the switch. In 2009, the legislature passed a law prohibiting even planning for Real ID. That law was repealed earlier this year as legislators heard from nervous constituents that resisting the federal requirement would complicate travel and visits to secure federal buildings. Republican Senator Warren Limmer of Maple Grove remains miffed by it all. He's worried that federal Homeland Security officials will expand the scope of the Real ID program once all states are finally on board.
I think it's important as we as a state considering whether we want to join the federal government in this regard, I hope we understand really what we're allowing ourselves to get into and how we're subrogating our authority to a political appointee in the federal government.
Under both House and Senate bills, license holders would have the power to opt out of the program. but that refusal would be stamped on their licenses, and it'd be up to them to find another way past airport security checkpoints. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.